Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Monday, November 24th, welcome, welcome, welcome on and friends to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And my name's Avi Wolfman Arendt.
So Avi, today we're talking about a machine that is fairly small, yet it's mighty enough to spark hours of heated testimony inside of a lower Marion Township meeting room. We're talking about leaf blowers, specifically gas-powered leaf blowers. These devices have caused a big stir and is kicking up more than just leaves these days. Lower Marion just voted to phase them out for good by 2029. Supporters say it is a breath of fresh air, cleaner lungs, quieter mornings, and fewer fumes blowing around the neighborhood. But critics say the township is way out of touch. The technology still blows, and landscapers will be the ones taking the hit. So today, we're asking, when it comes to gas-powered leaf blowers, how bad are they really? And if we're going to sunset them, what's the fair way to do it, right? We're going to talk to a couple of experts. We're going to hear all sides of the argument. And we'd love to hear from you, our listeners at home, on the road, and elsewhere. Where do you stand on the great leaf blower debate? The number to call to participate is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, you can leave your comments in the chat. And Avi, I did not realize, I live in the city, I did not realize how big of a deal this leaf blower debate has been. Like,
oh yeah,
I'm like stunned. I already got several emails from people this morning.
Yeah, they're flooding our inbox.
I'm like, what?
We need a leaf blower to get all those emails out of it. I'm just kidding. Great emails. Thank you, folks.
Yes.
Keep them coming.
Yes.
But I didn't know either.
Mm-mm.
It's not the soundtrack of Fall in My Neighborhood.
Not mine either.
But people are very passionate about mm-hmm. this issue. This is the first ban of its kind, apparently, in all of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So that's partially why we're
pretty
interested
big deal.
In it. So again, where do you stand on the great leaf blower debate? 888-477-9499, email studio2@whyy.org. It's a shame it's not a Thursday. Would have been a great DJ of the day topic.
I know. You were already, Avi, before we got on the show, he was playing some songs.
I was playing some Simon and Garfunkel. The leaves that are green turn brown.
People might just email us on a Monday.
All the leaves are brown and the sky is gray. The answer is blowing in the wind. A lot of good options. But it's not Thursday, sorry.
Yeah.
But we will still do our trio of local news stories. Yep. Before we start, just wanted to note some breaking news. We're not going to get into this.
Mm-hmm.
But the Inquirer is reporting that Governor Josh Shapiro has set aside some emergency funds for SEPTA to fix its regional rail cars, which have been a huge problem over the last few weeks. So we'll follow up on that story throughout the day. Be on the lookout and listen out for that. First, though, let's dig into the drama at the Philadelphia Art Museum, which is messier than Jackson Pollock's studio art reference. Last time we talked about this story, the museum board had abruptly fired CEO Sasha Suda shortly after she spearheaded a branding change that included a new logo and officially changing the institution's name to the Philadelphia Art Museum. Since then, Suda has sued the board, claiming they conducted a sham investigation into her use of museum funds and alleging that a small group of board members essentially conspired against her to get her fired. The museum has responded to that lawsuit, claiming that Suda misappropriated museum funds and tried to give herself several raises. And while all of this was going on, we learned that the museum's former head of HR and diversity initiatives is being charged criminally for stealing $58,000 from museum coffers. There's a little ray of sunshine in all these dark clouds that the museum did actually find a new CEO and director. He is Daniel Weiss. He's the former president and chief executive of the Metropolitan Museum of Art and was named CEO on Friday. That's a lot of news condensed into one story, but man, oh man, very turbulent time at the Philadelphia Art Museum.
Yeah, by the way, Suda, through her attorney, has denied the allegations made by the PMA board. She claims the narrative is false and, quote, fits the Philadelphia Museum's longstanding pattern of trying to cover up its misconduct and mistreatment of staff. I should mention that Suda was hired during a tumultuous time at the museum.
Yes.
And now Daniel Weiss, who, by the way, has connections to the area. He was the former president of Haverford College.
Indeed, so he was.
But now he is coming in a very tumultuous time, yeah. Right? He has a lot to deal with. He has to smooth out this controversy. He has to decide whether or not to roll back the recent name change and rebrand. And according to the Philadelphia Inquirer, the museum is operating at a financial deficit, has several big pieces of operational and facilities projects that are in need of attention. So he has his work cut out for him.
Yeah.
On day one.
I suppose it speaks to the strength of the brand and the museum and its legacy that amid all of this, they could get someone with a pretty high profile to come and be the CEO. But like you said, lots of work ahead. Story number two, Cherry.
Yes.
Speaking of work.
Work, yes.
Things that are dilapidated.
I know. Go ahead. The city of Philadelphia could soon see a 20-year tax abatement to help turn schools and old office buildings into housing. The long-awaited state budget apparently included a provision that would exempt, quote, improvements that convert deteriorated property into residential housing units from taxes for up to 20 years. And this means that city council and the mayor, they can now craft and pass legislation to support this. You know, housing has been a top priority for the Parker administration. She set a goal to build or preserve 30,000 units of housing. And the goal, says Parker, is to deal with the office market crisis in Center City, but she's also wants to apply this new provision to vacant schools and other underused buildings in neighborhoods as well. As you know, right now, Philadelphia had this 10-year tax abatement that applied to residential properties for renovations, but people criticized it. They said, look, you know, this is money that the city needs. This is money that the school district needs. And, you know, we're not giving the city the type of revenue. But, you know, the mayor has said this is going to be a surgical tool. This is not going to be a blanket for billionaires, and that this could definitely fill the void for affordable housing.
Yeah, like so many things, devil in details,
yes.
Right? So this legislation at the state level gives the municipalities the ability to define what constitutes a deteriorating area, because the property has to be in a, quote, a deteriorating area to qualify for this potential 20-year tax abatement. So I'm very curious how they're going to define that and how surgical the tool will indeed be. But we really don't know at this point.
We
just know that the runway is now there for a 20-year tax abatement. And like so many stories, we shall see. That could be like the tagline for this segment. We shall see.
We'll be watching.
Speaking of things you will see.
Mm-hmm.
If you are driving in Haddonfield, New Jersey this holiday season, and you see a yard with a giant inflatable green bean casserole decoration, and you're wondering why, well, we've got a story from written by Zoe Greenberg over at The Inquirer. That yard belongs to Thomas Riley. And 70 years ago, his late wife, Dorcas Bates Riley, was working at Campbell Soup Company in South Jersey when she developed the original recipe for green bean casserole.
All right.
Yes. Green bean casserole turned 70 years old this year. It's from our region. I did not know that until reading this particular story. The OG recipe, by the way, is Campbell's condensed cream of mushroom soup along with a splash of milk, soy sauce. Didn't know that. And black pepper, of course, crispy fried onions to top it off. Green bean casserole, Cherry, is it a must have on your Thanksgiving table?
Full disclosure, I have never tasted green bean casserole, and I don't know if I could sell it to the fam.
I've never tasted it.
Yeah. I've seen it.
Are you actively avoiding it?
No, I've just...
You've in your years of life, it's never been on a table in front of you and you took a bite?
I never took a bite. I mean...
You're missing out. You are missing out. It's so good.
Oh, wow.
It's amazing. It's creamy, but it's still a green element, so you feel like maybe you're eating something kind of
healthy. Yeah. Well, I mean, shout out to...
And I love crispy fried onions on top. I'm a huge fried onion guy.
But I love this story just because, you know, Miss Riley, she like created this out of things people would typically have at home.
Yeah.
So, you know,
totally.
So put this together and it became super popular and it boosted the sales of the cream mushroom soup.
Yeah. Those sales spike in November and December.
Yeah. And I've had a can of cream of mushroom soup for like 5 years. I need to bust that sucker open.
No offense to Campbell's, but that's the worst part of the green bean casserole.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, it's not like, to me, that's not as necessary as the green bean, some sort of creamy element. Of course, got to have the crispy onions on top.
Crispy onions.
It's not, by the way, it's not a standard on our Thanksgiving table, yeah. but it would be if I had my way. Put it like
oh,
that.
Oh, you're voting for it.
Well, I love green beans in general. Big green bean guy.
I do too. We have green beans, but we just haven't put the cream of mushroom and the and all
the
stuff.
Do you like casserole? Is it an anti-casserole thing?
We just don't have, other than macaroni and cheese casserole.
I have a lot of questions.
And sweet potato casserole, we don't have a lot of green
beans. So you're not anti-casserole and you're not anti-green bean. You just have never had green bean casserole.
I've never put the cream of mushroom soup. I might be anti-cream of mushroom soup, maybe.
Curious. Then don't do that. Just leave that part out. Because you don't really need that. You can find recipes now.
Will you
that
just
don't
put
have...
cheese on there?
You could have just some cream. You could put some mushrooms in there. You don't need that condensed. You don't need the Campbell.
You know what? And I'm anti-mushroom. That's the problem. I don't like mushrooms.
I have an issue with that. Okay. Moving on.
But I'm sure it's delicious. And happy 70th.
You know what? Moving on. We got to do a new debate now. Not green beans, but gas-powered leaf blowers. That's what we're talking about on the other side of the break. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Studio 2 on WHYY.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. Gas-powered leaf blowers. Banned? You better believe it. Lower Marion Township, west of Philadelphia, just became the first municipality in Pennsylvania to phase out the noisy foliage-fighting devices, joining several cities around the country.
Residents complained about the sounds, the smells, and the pollution emitted by gas-powered blowers. But landscapers say they're necessary tools of the trade and that an all-out ban will wreck their business model.
We will hear from a critic and a booster later this hour, but first, let me introduce Todd Sinai, president of the Lower Marion Board of Commissioners. Todd, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Avi.
Yes, and we'd love to hear from you, our listeners at home, on the road, and elsewhere. What are your thoughts? Where do you stand on the great leaf blower debate? You can give us a call. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, you leave your comments in the chat.
Let's set up with a comment from Bill and Devin, who says, as I write this, two men are raking my lawn and hauling the leaves to a wild place in my backyard where the leaves will provide insects for birds and eventually nutrients for trees. My neighborhood is quiet, and other than the truck they used to get here, no gas was burned. So Bill, clearly not a fan of leaf blowers, prefers the raking method.
Yes.
So Todd, let's backtrack a little bit. How did this idea and this issue come on your radar before you guys enacted the phase-out ban?
Well, you have to understand, Avi, we've been working on this for at least 5 years.
Wow.
And, you know, when we started, it was a discussion. Possibly technology was not quite ready back then. And we said, well, what we have to do in our township before we ask other people to stop using gas-powered leaf blowers is we have to prove that we can do it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first phase of this, which is a seasonal restriction on gas-powered leaf blowers, can't use them in the summer, can't use them in the winter. We in the township, our Parks and Rec Department, have already been doing. We've proven it for a year, and we figured it was ready for prime time.
Wow. And so tell us a little bit about the process. You guys, you did test it, but there has been some pushback. And how have you been dealing with that?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think there's always pushback. What we're asking people to do is adopt new equipment and a new workflow often. And I think what we've looked to is to say, well, you know, we are the first municipality in Pennsylvania to do this, but we are not the first municipality to do this, period.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So municipalities in Massachusetts, in Illinois, in the entire county, Montgomery and Maryland have done this already, and we can look to see what their experience was.
And what's your view of what their experience was?
The amazing thing is that the reaction afterwards is we are so happy we did this. We found no evidence that landscaping costs have gone up. We've seen no evidence of landscapers leaving the market. What we have heard is people saying it's quiet now, it's cleaner now. And what happens is you give people a constraint. You can't use gas-powered leaf blowers. Well, they live up to it. They find ways.
Yeah.
They innovate and they adapt.
Yeah.
So let's get into the details of what you guys are proposing or have passed here. So starting June 1st, of next year, gas-powered leaf blowers banned seasonally, right? That's the first phase. Then we get to 2028, only permitted in the fall, 2029, banned completely. That's the basic rundown here?
That's the phase out, yep.
Okay, and so you said that you had tested every part of this phase out so far on like the municipal properties, or just the first part of the phase out?
Just the first part of the phase out.
Okay.
Right. So, yeah.
So you haven't tested full ban when it comes to maintaining the township's own properties.
So we've gone to using electric in, tried it in all seasons. I think the way to describe what happens is there's a difference between trying to substitute electric leaf blowers in your entire workflow, mm-hmm. and saying, well, if I just substitute for what I'm doing now, will it work? Versus I'm adjusting how I'm doing things to use this new tool, right? And so we've done the first part. So could you just substitute them one for one in our existing mm-hmm. workflow? And you have to actually do the transition to get to the second part, which is to say, okay, well, now what we need is a charging infrastructure and all those things to be able to do the rest of it.
Mm-hmm. And so what is, because the charging has become mm-hmm. a big part of it. And some folks use these generators, and I understand that under this ban, those would also be banned at some point.
Yeah, so you can't use, it would be counterproductive to say you can't use gas-powered leaf blowers, but you could just run a gas-powered generator to charge your electric mm-hmm. leaf blower. So so we don't let that happen either. Now, there are all sorts of ways to charge these things, and it ranges from just having a bank of batteries to having a master battery in a truck to plugging it into the client's house to... have some landscapers have solar panels on their trucks, right? So there are different ways and approaches of doing it to deal with the energy density of batteries versus what you can get in a 5 gallon container of gasoline, mm-hmm. right? Really, the big challenge with electric leaf blowers is how do you transition from gasoline as your energy is going to come from to batteries. And it takes a bunch of batteries. So you look for ways to not have to carry 8 hours of batteries on a truck. Fortunately, you just don't really often have these situations where people run gas-powered leaf blowers for 8 hours continuously without the ability to recharge the batteries along the way.
Mm-hmm. And so those will only be a small number of people, you're basically saying, who will be impacted by that part of
it. Well, I mean, I think so you need, the reason for the seasonal phase out, right, is that we're starting with restrictions on using gas-powered leaf blowers in the seasons where people generally don't use leaf blowers very much anyway, right? And you just don't really need gas-powered leaf blowers to blow grass clippings off your mm-hmm. off your sidewalk, right? So the first 2 years is like a really light lift. And even in the spring, when you have a spring cleanup, that's something that existing straight workflow, you could substitute electric leaf blowers. The fall cleanup is where the hurdle is. But like by the time we get to that 4 years from now, other communities have already banned, leafy communities have already banned gas-powered leaf blowers the entire year, like 2 years ago. So it'll be 5 years by then, right? There's 5 years of experience in technology. And if other communities can do it now, we can do it in 3 years.
Yeah. Well, let's bring in a caller. We have Jim from Lansdowne on the line. Jim, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
My comment is that I'm an old man, and I just bought a handheld Husqvarna leaf blower. And I got a lot of work done yesterday with that, and it would have taken me many days to have done it with a rake. So I don't hire people to mow my lawn. I hire my grandson to mow my lawn, mm-hmm. and it's just I can't figure out how I'm going to deal with all the, we have trees all over my neighborhood, and there are leaves all over, a foot deep, all over my back lawn and my front lawn.
Yeah.
I just don't know how I'm going to deal with it.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you, all Jim, right, from Lansdowne.
Let's bring in a second caller now. Different opinion here, I believe, from Will in Concordville. Mm-hmm. Will, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Avi, I listen to you guys every day.
Thanks, Will.
Well, thank you.
It's about Philly, and I kind of tune out, but this is about my neighborhood. I live in a retirement community, and about every Tuesday morning, a brigade of five or six, it varies, gas-powered leaf blowers appear strapped to the backs of the workers, and they're very noisy and annoying to the residents. We don't like the gas fumes, but maybe more importantly, I wonder how it affects the health of the operators, both their hearing and their breathing. I understand there are problems in phasing them out. I think they are going to phase them out, but this ought to be universal, you know, throughout the country, that we phase these things out without causing any economic hardship to the people who provide these services. I'm not talking about individual homeowners. That's a different issue, but I'm talking about commercial ventures, mm-hmm. which I'm dealing with here. So, yeah.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you, Will.
So we heard from Will and Jim there expressing different perspectives. Mm-hmm. We haven't really gotten to the backstory yet, Todd, of why people were complaining about this and how this sort of issue popped onto your radar. So what is the basic problem, as you see it, with the gas-powered blowers? And what were you hearing from residents about them?
Yeah, I mean, it's the exact right question, right? Well, why should government get involved mm-hmm. in this, right? And the number one reason is health. So these gas-powered blowers, in the first caller, you know, was worried about the elimination of blowers. Well, the electric blowers are just as powerful as the gas blowers. You still get to blow your leaves, right? Mm-hmm. But the reason to get rid of the gas-powered blowers is that they're really noisy. They cause hearing loss. They're basically incredibly polluting. And so they're putting raw gas and oil. They're just dispersing it into the air. They have all this unburnt fuel. What they do burn, they burn oil. They create benzene. They're carcinogens. It creates asthma, heart disease, birth defects, all sorts of stuff, right? So the health reason is the number one reason. Mm-hmm. The second is the environment. And so, you know, a gas-powered leaf blower for 1 hour is the same pollutants as a car driven for 1,000 miles. Right.
So 1 hour leaf blower
is 1,000
same amount
miles.
Of emissions as 1,000 miles of driving.
1,000 miles of cover. And so you that in the abstract that you're like, yeah, cars drive a lot, but if you think about it, like imagine running a car in your mm-hmm. backyard for 1,000 miles.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
everyone would flip out, right? Mm-hmm. But we've gotten accustomed to doing this with leaf blowers, not just one, but several running for more than an hour, right? And so that is hugely polluting, just locally, not just globally. And then the third is, yeah, people, they're noisy. Yeah. Right? The electric leaf blowers are much quieter. And if you think about the quality of life, the noise is a really big issue.
Well, I want to remind you, our listeners at home, on the road, and elsewhere, you can participate in this conversation. Our question of the day is, where do you stand on the great leaf blower debate? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, share the video, but also leave your comments in the chat. Judy from Morristown said, I laud the ban. No other machine makes such a loud noise that travels such a long distance. People don't realize, she says, that landscapers are exposed all day to this noise and the gasoline exhaust, which causes lung cancer and other respiratory problems and deafness. Residents should stop wanting lawn perfection. Nature doesn't allow it. Todd, I wanted to quickly talk about the teeth of this ban. Like, how will you enforce it? And are there, I didn't see anything that sweetens the deal to folks to sort of like make the transition to electric.
Yeah. So two good questions. And the first is, how do we enforce it? And we will enforce the same way that we enforce everything else in our property code in the township, right? So there are all sorts of things that you cannot do on your property in Lower Merion Township. And the way it's enforced is that if you do it, someone calls in, right? It might be a neighbor. Often in Lower Merion, there are people who walk around, and when they spot things, they call it in. And so it ends up being community enforcement, and that's how it works. Mm-hmm. With pretty much everything, right? So it's no different with this. And then the second is, you know, sweetening the deal. I think that's the next thing for our Board of Commissioners to take up is, you know, what could, you know, such programs look like? And I can't speak for what the board
giving
would choose
incentives
to do.
Versus just fines.
Yeah, I mean, so it's complicated, probably more complicated for us to get into on this show, but like, you know, there's been a mix of precedents for other communities have done out there. Evanston, Illinois had some help you buy leaf blower programs. Lexington, Massachusetts just said, no, we're just eliminating these things.
Before we let you go, Todd, one thing that that last commenter alluded to was this idea that nature doesn't allow for perfect lawns, and yet we try to sort of cultivate and maintain these perfect lawns. Yeah. I wonder if part of this is a culture shift in terms of, like, you're going to do landscaping differently. Maybe you'll do, you know, 30 minutes of leaf blowing instead of an hour, and you'll live with the results of that. Now, obviously, the government can't enforce culture shift, but do you think that's going to be part of the ultimate, you know, remedy here, is that people are just going to care for their lawns differently, and they're going to tolerate different types of lawns in your community? Do you think that's a possibility?
Yeah, as part of my research before we voted on this, I talked to a landscaper in Evanston, Illinois, where they had passed this ban in 2023 to just find out what the experience had been there. And that landscaper said, yeah, you know, this idea of a perfect lawn is something that the industry sells you, just like the diamond industry says you need to spend 3 months' salary on an engagement ring.
Sure.
Right? There's nothing in nature that says that's what you should do. What nature says you should do is, like, if you want to have a clean lawn, is you pull them up with a lawnmower and you dump the leaves in your flower beds, and it's great for the flowers. You need one-third as much mulch in the spring, right? And that's what you would do. I've been at this long enough not to bet on people changing how they want things to look. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when people adapt, right, then maybe one of the ways you adapt is you just have a more healthy way of maintaining and taking care of your lawn, and this somewhat artificial aesthetic goes away. Mm. That would be a way that people like could respond.
There sounds like there's going to have to be some education here.
The township has a huge initiative to educate both landscapers and residents. One thing we've discovered is that there's really great best practices out there in other states and other places in Pennsylvania where people have made electric landscaping work. And we just have to teach people the best practices, and we'll bring them in to do that.
Well, yeah. Todd Sinai, thank you so much for your time today on Studio 2.
Thank you very much for having me.
That was Todd Sinai, president of the Lower Merion Board of Commissioners. They recently passed a phase-out plan to get rid of gas-powered leaf blowers in the township. That's the first plan of its kind in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Yes, and now we want to welcome in a landscaping professional. Gerhard Arndt is the founder and owner of Sustainable Lawn Care Services, located in Plymouth Meeting. Gerhard, thank you so much for being here.
Hey, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
And so you probably heard some of what Todd had to say about the new ordinance in Lower Merion. You work in landscaping, and I understand you've actually used the electric leaf blowers. Talk about your experience and just give your reaction to the rollout of this ban.
Yeah, so I've been all battery since 2020, and I've showed up to the last three meetings, Board of Commissions, and complete opposition as a business owner. Probably one of the biggest environmentalists you'll ever meet. If you do know anyone more, please, I would love to talk to them and network with them. But as a business owner, someone who's trying to grow a business, especially when you consider 9 out of 10 small businesses fail within the first 5 years, and the second highest failure rate of all industries in business is lawn care landscape. I have had to completely pivot my entire business model from mowing and traditional landscaping to fertilization, weed control, organic-based, carbon-based fertilizer, of course, and holiday lighting, because it just simply is not where it needs to be economically and, especially when it comes to the actual power of these things. Now, you get the claims from these companies who are trying, just like you said, you know, the diamond companies want to tell you to save up all this money to buy all these things. Well, the equipment manufacturer companies, they're going to tell you, of course, they're going to tell you you're going to get all this runtime and it's going to be great and everything. But as someone who's been doing it for 5 years, I have not found one company who says something and it actually happens.
Well, let me just summarize real quick, Gerhard. So you're saying that you attempted to adopt all electric in your business model, and as a result, what, you just can't do leaf blowing services now because you're just not competitive with your leaf blowing?
On price-wise, correct. And, you know, the actual conditions don't allow it. I mean, I've tried for years to make this happen. I've tried we're going to mulch it up with the mower and the bagger, which, you know, all battery equipment there. We're going to put it on tarps, and it's just nowhere near as efficient, and no one wants to pay what the actual price is for the hourly rate to recover the cost of all these things. And my batteries, I mean, I have thousands of dollars of paperweights because they don't last more than 2 to 3 years. And that's almost right outside their battery, their warranty.
And so, Gerhard, just explain to us, because for folks who may not use these leaf blowers, right? So is it just that you turn on the leaf blower, they only work for X amount of time and they conk out? Like, tell us the specific issue.
So, yeah, when you're talking about the conditions of fall cleanup, when it is, I mean, just last week we had 40 degrees with 40 mile per hour gusts. The batteries do not, they say on there that the temperature range you're supposed to use them in is 40 degrees to, I believe, 80 or 90. And when you're outside of that temperature range, they just deplete very fast. Mm-hmm. And then they also, in the same regard, take very long to charge back up, especially because they'll overheat. Even in the cold, throughout extensive use, they'll overheat, and then they'll just sit on the charger.
Yeah.
I mean, I've spent thousands of dollars on batteries to do leaf cleanups with multiple chargers, and you have to just sit there and wait while you're raking leaves. And you're like, oh, man, I am just losing money out the wazoo because it's just – it's not viable. Yeah. Now, I do believe that there's going to be a time when someone like Elon Musk comes along and creates a backpack or a battery blower that's the Tesla of the battery blowers, that is economically viable, and it also puts out the same amount of output as a gas leaf blower. I believe that'll happen. But
just not there yet.
Right now, it would, and right now, it's just going to kill small businesses, and
well,
it's
let me
not
ask you.
Just my industry.
Yeah, let me ask you though, Gerhard, like as a follow up, because you're saying like we tried to pivot to the gas, to the electric, it doesn't work. So now I have to offer other services. One possibility here is that, you know, the gas powered ones get banned, and now all of a sudden you are competitive, and people do accept, I suppose, I don't want to say a lower quality finish, but they accept sort of some leaves being left there, and all of a sudden you are now able to go, you know, mano a mano against the folks that have the used to have the gas powered ones. I mean, is that not a possibility here?
So, I mean, I will tell you that in starting this business, I have had a lot of the local guys actually laugh at me for trying. And I'm so serious.
Yeah.
You know, as someone who fully believes in it and has tried to champion it, it was very disheartening.
Yeah.
But then now, because of this, I've actually networked with a bunch of these guys, and I've come to find out that our hourly rates, compared to what they're charging for the same services, they are 2 to 3+ times what they're charging. And that's just not economically viable for most people. I mean, we have there's a reason why we have not grown. I'm owner-operator.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about, this is now 2025, and 2020, I started. When people would get a child can take $1,000, go to Home Depot and have a mowing company.
Yeah.
Buying gas equipment. That can't happen anymore.
Yeah.
And there's so many very successful entrepreneurs who have done many great things for our world. And you look back at their origin story, and it's, I started out with a lawn care company. You just took that entire economic sector out. You just took out future great entrepreneurs.
Yeah. And Gerhard, as we get ready to wrap up this segment, just got to ask you, what would be your solution then? I mean, there's clearly, you know, the science shows that there are some issues with this. It is loud. There are environmental impacts. What would you do?
I would wait until someone comes along who creates the Tesla of the blowers. It's got to be economically viable. And it's got to be as also, you know, efficient as possible. And also to touch on the health thing, because it's noise and it's health. That's the biggest concerns, right? Well, when I walk into a public restroom and I have to sit there and spray and smell the chemicals that are sprayed all the time that are more volatile to my health than a gas leaf blower, well, why are we not saying anything about that? There's over 3,000 chemicals in perfume that are known to cause asthma and cancer, but we're not waging a war on massive perfume companies. We're waging a war on these small business owners who cannot economically stand to spend thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Because someone, you know, a few people decided, we can't do it. We can't take this anymore.
Well, that's Gerhardt Arndt. Thanks so much for your perspective, Gerhardt. Gerhardt is the owner-operator of Sustainable Lawn Care Services in the Philly Burbs. Appreciate your time today, sir, on Studio 2. We got a lot of callers lined up, a lot of comments, and some more perspectives on the way on Studio 2. Keep those calls coming, 888-477-9499.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolf-Manarant.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We're talking about gas-powered leaf blower bans this hour. Lower Marion Township just passed one. Earlier, we heard from a township commissioner and a professional landscaper, and now we want to dig into the science. What do we know about the health risks, air pollution, and the noise that gas-powered machines generate? We have David Mazur joins us. He's the executive director of Penn Environment. David, thank you so much for being on Studio 2.
Hey, Cherry. Hi, Abby. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you taking some time, David. And we're asking you this hour, where do you stand on the great leaf blower debate? 888-477-9499 is the number. The email studio2@whyy.org, YouTube, Facebook. How you doing? Drop a comment in the chat. Let's hear now from Matthew
from
Doylestown. Matthew, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi there. Yeah, I'm a I also owned a landscape business here for the last 12 years, and our mission was basically in environmentalism and using electric equipment for the last 10 years. So I just wanted to call in, offering perspective on the commercial level of success using only electrical and battery equipment.
Did you find success? Have you found success?
Yes. Yeah. No, it's, I think that's the interesting thing about our story is we've been doing it for 10 years before these ordinances were coming in. And we have. I think it's completely possible. We've done it. And I think the biggest thing is that you can't expect to go toe to toe with a gas powered leaf blower. You have to change the mindset and the goal. Mm-hmm. And then it's completely possible. Mm.
Thank you.
Interesting.
Matthew
call.
From Doylestown.
Line three, we've got Jim from just outside Doylestown. How about that? Hey, Jim, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
My comment is a couple of things. First of all, I'm very sympathetic to Gerhard's comments in trying to maintain a business. But I agree that if these gasoline blowers are banned, innovative people will come up with viable solutions for electric ones. That always happens. When there's a problem to be solved and no other way out, there's some creative people that make a fix. I also would argue with Gerhard that he's the most environmental person he knows. I put solar panels in 16 years ago. I've been buying nothing but hybrids and EVs since 2004, I have a geothermal HVAC system. So I'm a fanatic about environmentalism.
There's
no doubt about it.
Makes sense. Thank you so much, Jim.
Thank you. That's Jim. Just outside of Doylestown. Thank you so much.
Lots of folks are passionate about the environment. But look, I
David,
guess we want to David.
David, we want to bring you into the conversation. And just, you know, we heard from Todd earlier, talked about one of the many reasons why they decided to enact this ban. But I want you to sort of back it up with the science. Tell us about gas-powered leaf blowers. What do they do to the environment and to, you know, human beings? What are some of the impacts?
Well, sure. You know, there's a lot of data out there that these small devices, gas-powered leaf blowers, can pack a huge punch when it comes to pollution. And I tend to think there's really three types of pollution that at Penn Environment we focus on when it comes to gas-powered lawn equipment and why electric alternatives are so much better. Number one, air pollution, that's just bad for our health. Gas-powered leaf blowers emit particulate pollution and what we call NOx and SOx emissions, which are they're sort of the basic compounds we have of air pollution that causes and triggers asthma attacks, other respiratory ailments, and gas-powered leaf blowers are huge emitters of these different sort of core air pollutants. Number two is global warming pollution. Powered lawn equipment for their size emit a lot of climate pollution, as Todd noted. And then last is the noise pollution. Certainly they're very loud, gas-powered lawn equipment, and bad for our ears and can lead to hearing loss and other negative health effects because of the noise. So there's a couple of different factors. And luckily, you know, the electric options are cleaner and quieter, which both are good for the users and they're good for neighbors of the users.
Real quick, this is a question from Jane. How are the batteries recycled at the end of their lives? I assume she's talking about the electric powered leaf blowers. How does that impact the environment? So are there environmental impacts for these electric blowers? And if so, David, what are they?
Yeah, that's a great question. And this has really been a priority, I think, of the industry writ large, that as more and more landscapers and residents are transitioning over to electric powered leaf blowers and other electric equipment, that they're working to find more ways and simpler ways to recycle those batteries to make sure that they reduce the overall environmental footprint. So I've talked to many national manufacturers, big name brands, if it's Steel or Milwaukee Tools or others. And this issue of battery recycling is a big priority for them. And I think it will continue to be an issue as I believe the trend will continue. We'll keep seeing more and more electric lawn equipment. And so that recycling issue, I think, will continue to get better, just like the equipment itself gets better.
Yeah, let's bring in another caller. We have Jessica from Montclair on the line. Jessica, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
North Jersey, how you doing?
Hello?
North Jersey, how you doing, Jessica?
Good, thank you. I live in Montclair, New Jersey, and I was very active in the campaign that led us to have a full year prohibition on this very dangerous machine here. We're in our third fall. This is possible. We have had no businesses closed or be shuttered over this. And this is a public health decision far above anything else. So in light of that, I thought I would read to you from the a leading manufacturer's safety manual for a current model gas leaf blower that is on the market today. This product generates toxic exhaust fumes containing chemicals such as unburned hydrocarbons, including benzene, and carbon monoxide that are known to cause respiratory problems, cancer, birth defects, or other reproductive harm. Some of the gases, such as carbon monoxide, may be odorless and colorless. This is exactly why this kind of legislation is being passed, is to protect people, no more so than the workers. But a machine that does that on their backs, usually without protection, and most of us know that they make up an invisible workforce that very often does not have health care benefits, and that is the commitment of this legislation, and that the technology is available, but the technology... We didn't require this technology for generations.
Yeah.
And now to bring into it these issues of what will happen with recycling. Well, did anyone ever bring up recycling of gas cans or the gas leaf blowers that break and are abandoned? Where were those recycled? But now that people are committing to public health, now suddenly we're questioning the batteries. And there are issues with the batteries. We know that. But at the same time, people could make zero investment
and Jessica, we got to get back to the conversation. But thank you for making those wonderful points. That's Jessica from Montclair, New Jersey. And you know, David, I want you to zoom out because, you know, we talked a little bit about other townships, other municipalities who've enacted these types of bans. Jessica said in Montclair, no businesses, you know, went under because of this. What have you seen from other townships, other municipalities that have rolled out these bans?
Yeah, I think Jessica's point's a good one, and Todd mentioned it with Evanston and other municipalities around the country. You know, I think if these policies are implemented wisely, obviously they're taking into account the business community as much as possible at the same time. These can be done in ways that have a lot of benefits and less pain for the business community. particularly when they're phased in, like the Lower Merion proposal. So I think, you know, we'll see this trend probably continue, that local or county officials, even state officials, will look for ways to either require or incentivize the transition to electric lawn equipment, since it's going to be so important for protecting public health. And I'd add, this is really a direction that the industry is headed to. If you look at either the manufacturers or the retailers like Home Depot, they're making the transition and committed to really selling the vast majority of their lawn equipment in the upcoming years. And I'd say that really speaks to the economics of this. Certainly, if you're Home Depot, you want to sell items, you want to make sure that the products on your shelf sell. If you're Steel or Milwaukee Tools or Ego, you want to be a manufacturer that has a product that can sell. The fact that they're all leaning into this, I think, speaks to the fact that this is also what consumers are moving towards as well.
And I have a quick follow-up for you, David, because one of the callers that we didn't get to actually asked the question about whether or not other, besides leaf blowers, right, gas-powered leaf blowers, have other municipalities maybe decided to ban other forms of lawn equipment that are gas, that it happens to be gas powered. Have you seen those bans expand? And given the fact that the industry is sort of leaning into making everything battery powered?
Yeah, I think leaf blowers is the one that we see most often because the technology is the farthest along right now. The price is comparable. Actually, over the life of the product, consumers or landscape businesses will save money on the electric leaf blower because it has a longer lifespan. You aren't paying for the price of the fuel. But I think all across the country, there are policies, either again, incentives or mandates to move away from the whole set of gas-powered lawn equipment. And I'd add, it's not just lawn equipment in the traditional sense of the spring, summer, and fall months, but also there's a growing business around electric winter equipment as well, like snow blowers and all those things. When we have snow in those states or communities around the country, that they have cleaner equipment as well. So I think this will continue to grow. And as we've said, as you know, there'll be sort of like an ongoing cycle as the technology gets better. More local officials will want to do this. As more local officials do this, it'll spur the technology to get better, and on.
David, I assume a different David, says people should prepare and practice a leaf management program for their property. If you have a stand of trees in your property, just move the leaves to the woodland floor. This is what happens in nature. The leaves feed and protect the root system. They also act as a sponge and will slow down runoff. This is a sort of, you can't quantify this, the other David Mazur, but one of the big questions here is whether people will accept different lawn care treatments, and will accept that their lawns might look different if they, you know, practice different management protocols. Do you think that's changing as well? People are becoming, I don't know, they're not looking for the same type of lawn that they might have looked for 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah, I think there is that trend. Of course, it's hard to overgeneralize when we're talking about, you know, hundreds of millions of people with lawns around the country. But I do think there are people looking at, you know, is that traditional idea of the green, you know, impeccable lawn what folks want? You know, I know my own parents have gotten rid of a lot of their grass, and they put in native plants and wildflowers. It's less care for them, you know, and that's what they wanted to do. And I think you'll see, you know, more of that trend occurring as well. You know, so I think it's really up to the, you know, homeowner to decide. I'd add, you know, it makes sense. Some of this may have some growing pains. I think it's human nature for all of us that when we're told or asked to try something new or get out of our comfort zone, you know, we have a little healthy skepticism, and maybe a little sense of, you know, anxiety or discomfort. But so often when we take that leap of faith, if it's a policy like this or, you know, a lifestyle choice we make, it ends up to be such a good one and have so many benefits. I think we look back on and go, oh, I'm really glad I took that step. it made a big difference.
Yeah. Agnes from Media says, I have a love-hate relationship with gas-powered leaf blowers. Yes, they're loud and stinky, but they are so much more effective than raking leaves. Lower Merion is just displacing the pollution problem to someone else's backyard. Sue says, I live in Montgomery County, close to the Bucks County line. Lots of big houses and big lawns in my area, and almost everyone has lawn services. Mm-hmm. The roar of the blowers is constant, and the smell of fumes when they blow through the neighborhood is awful. And one of the questions I asked Todd, I want to ask you, David. I mean, what does it look like when you start doing this education rollout? Because you got to convince people to sort of buy into this and to really, I mean, in order to make this rollout work.
Yeah, I think there's a whole variety of things you need to do. I mean, certainly you have to get people the facts and show them that there are, you know, objective forces out there that, you know, have no financially vested interest. They just want the facts to fall where they may and show the benefits of doing this. And, you know, I think hopefully that goes a long way. I'd like to hope that, you know, the messenger matters too. So if it's your local elected official or nonprofit, groups like Penn Environment saying, you know, we've done our homework and, you know, this is the right path forward, that adds as well. But we've even gone as far as we've partnered with many of the manufacturers, if it's steel tool or if it's working with Ego, who's their entire line, it's like, or Milwaukee Tools or Ace Hardware, you know, and do these sort of, you know, road shows where people can see the equipment and test it. That makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we got to see and hear from you, David Mazur, Executive Director of Penn Environment. Appreciate your time today on Studio 2.
Thanks, Abby. Thanks, Jerry.
Yes, thank you so much. And thank you to everybody who called in today and wrote in about this issue. And thank you, of course, to our producers, Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and Hazel Mae Bryan. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, and to Al Banks and Tina Calique, who engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We will talk to you tomorrow.